Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I remember spending hours making my own fun in Kirby Air Ride for the GameCube. While the game's main mode was ultimately a mediocre kart racer, there was another mode tied to a small open world city that allowed the player to explore off or on in any of the game's multiple vehicles. My buds and I would claim each one of the map's smaller areas of our own and collect all our favorite vehicles, then go back and forth trying to steal each other's carts, basically recreating a preschooler-friendly version of GTA. All of this was created in a relatively empty sandbox in a weird Nintendo spinoff that few people remember. Yet it holds an equally lofty place in my heart as the hours I dumped into multiplayer Titan Super Smash Bros., and I think that's pretty neat. In some ways, I'm still looking for a game that captures that improvisational magic. And those are the words from a reader/listener, Adam, in a call I put out the other day about making your own fun in games. And that's going to be our topic today here on Waypoint Radio, episode 146. I'm Danielle Riendo, and I'm joined today by Rob Zachney.
Hello, hello.
By Patrick Klepek.
Hey.
And by Austin Walker.
I'm making my own fun.
You sure are.
What am I doing? I'm trying to make a game really quick. I'm going to try not to drink all of the water in this cup by the end of this podcast.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be hard because I'm very thirsty.
That's a hard game.
Exactly.
There's always fun in making a game out of any situation, out of anything in life. And, this topic, of course, is kind of evergreen, but it's also it was definitely brought up to me by the idea of, making your own fun in Sea of Thieves. We're streaming a lot of Sea of Thieves these days. It sure seems like, Austin, you and Patrick are making your own fun in a way out in certain ways.
Yeah,
or role-playing
totally.
In a certain way. And maybe that makes it more fun than Rob had in that game. So I figured this is a good topic to kind of chat about. And we have a lot of stories from readers as well that are pretty fun about kind of finding your own game or making your own little game within the game, which is always a good-ass time. So do you want to talk about A Way Out a little bit?
I guess that's where we should start. Yeah, well, it's funny because I think it's like you said, it's Sea of Thieves. It's A Way Out. I realized
Far Cry,
it's Far Cry 5, where like the thing that they want me to have with it is not what I'm having with it.
Yeah.
And instead, the best time I had was playing it with Patrick. It's even XCOM 2 War of the Chosen, where Rob and I will occasionally fall into – we'll do like a really intense mission, and then for 20 minutes at the end of any given session, we'll be like, oh, we recruited this new soldier. It's time to play Barbie dress-up and write out a whole backstory for this character and like figure out who they are and make them look absolutely ridiculous.
It's also what Natalie was doing in Bloodborne the other day.
Absolutely
true. That jump. And I think Danica and I were making our own fun of watching you do this. And Natalie's like,
that was not fun for Natalie?
No, she said no. She just said off mic, no, not at all. But yeah, so I think it's been in my head and all of our heads in some ways a lot recently. In Sea of Thieves and in A Way Out, the thing that is so interesting for me is versus like XCOM versus even Far Cry, which I'm still enjoying when I take an outpost or something, right? It's just I'm really enjoying it when it's like, hey, let's both get in planes and try to do some bullshit. In Way Out and in Sea of Thieves, I don't know if I would be enjoying it as much if not for the extra spins we're putting on it. Sea of Thieves more so than A Way Out,
I'd say.
Sea of Thieves is just like a game when I look at it on its face, I'm like, ain't much here. Like, I don't this isn't a news podcast, right? But like a thing that happened this week was that someone finally hit the level 50 like Pirate Legend cap, where they got level 50 across all three
all the criteria.
All the three different like factions basically. They did it in a kind of suspect
yeah, I was gonna
way.
Say, I'm not sure they is the operative term. The community of people who is helping shepherd loot into this person's ship so they could game the system and
listen,
and
pirates got pirates make it
pirates
the way they
got
pirates have crews.
I don't have a problem with, like, I don't have like a, the problem with it is that like, is that a like a fulfilling reward less that the person went through the,
yes.
the hoops to get there.
Well, like, imagine if he had gone through the hoops to get there and then he got the reward he got, which was very little. So to set that up just a little bit, and I guess spoilers for Sea of Thieves, which is like a very story light game anyway.
Yeah.
But so there are three factions, and it's like one of them is you're going to go hunt for treasure. One of them is you're going to go fight pirates. And one of them is you're going to go find animals, capture them, and then trade them in at outposts. All of those things are various degrees of monotonous. And the fun comes from what you do on the way there, how your ship gets caught up in the very like dynamic storms and weather systems, how you may or may not be attacked by other enemy ships or other players. Ships, all of the sort of like the sort of things at the edges that give life to something that is really plain. But this guy got to level 50 by a combination of playing the game himself, but mostly through his fans feeding him like the things you turn in at the quests. He like jumped from game to game and like be part of teams that were handing in quests, and then got to level 50, and then found that the reward was like a new area, a new like an outpost, basically, like a legendary outpost. It's filled with ghosts and some other cool stuff.
Oh.
But, like, nothing else, really. And the big reward was, and this is why I think making your own fun in Sea of Thieves is so important, was that you gain access to a new type of – or a new faction of quests that gives you a combination of the other quests you've already been doing the whole game. Like, it's like, oh, well, now you can fight skeletons and collect treasure, hunt for treasure in the same overall quest structure. But it's just the same stuff again, just more of it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, okay, there is no fourth, like, extra thing that's really going to bring this game to life. It's going to be whatever you bring to it. And all of us have played that game. What has been, like, the one thing that you have found, you're like, I got to do this thing. This is the thing that brings me joy in this game, even though the game itself maybe not as the game structure itself, the quests, the combat, whatever it is, isn't providing it. What's the one thing for all of you that you're like, this is the thing that I find fun or that I'm making my own fun with?
You guys on the call want to take this one first? Rob?
Helmsman Rob?
Helmsman Commodore?
I mean, yeah, but the thing is, for me, like, I'm over it. Right? Like,
oh,
damn.
I mean, that's
he's
the thing.
Done.
Unless, like, it relies on other people coming along to make the fun for me,
right?
To an extent. Like, it requires stumbling across someone who's just the right kind of asshole to create sort of a pirate chase. Either we're dueling with guns or we're chasing each other, you know, across the ocean. Then that's really cool. Then all the sailing systems, simple as they are, begin to come into effect. The sort
I'm sorry
of,
you're not tacking enough for you, Rob. We're not
God damn, like, but for real though, tacking is pretty essential. Okay, like,
I get you.
This whole like, oh, just sail into the wind like an asshole.
Tacking?
They're magic boats, I guess.
What is tacking?
Okay, so tacking, Danielle. So the thing is, a sailing ship can't sail into the wind because the wind is how it propels itself. It just can't like really be done. But what you can do is you sail sort of close, like just off being directly against the wind, and then you angle your sails so that you move slowly in an oblique direction off the wind, even though, and then you sort of reverse direction, so you average out to a straight line that goes against the wind.
Okay.
I hope everyone comes out to my new gallery show, An Oblique Direction.
I like that.
I'm really exploring the notion of antagonism and opposition.
And you can make your own fun while you go to this gallery by only looking at the every third painting.
Right.
You
have to tack your way
That'll
through the gallery space.
I'm sorry.
Just imagine how much fun you'd have, like, having, like, the helmsman or the ship's master, like, call for those direction changes and everyone has to move the sails at once. And, oh, it'd be great.
That'd be fun.
But we don't do that.
One day, Rob, we'll have the version of this for you.
But, like, I guess for me, the point is, like, there are moments where, like, in a really nasty storm, Sea of Thieves becomes a really fun, like, nautical adventure in a way I like. But at other times, it kind of feels a little bit too much like being sort of abandoned at Grandma and Grandpa's house and, like, there's not really the toys you want or any toys at all, but you just have to, like, make something out of this so you don't, like, go, like, die from fucking boredom. So I guess, like, that's where I'm at with Sea of Thieves, and that's why, like, I'm all about, like, using fun systems to create even more fun. I'm a little bit less here for, like, we built this parking lot where we might build a game someday.
You here see are some shopping there you carts. Like, yeah, crash these shopping carts against each other.
Patrick, how about you? Is there something you like especially?
I mean, it's interesting because prior to Fallout 3, I did not really touch open world games because, by and large, I'm someone that prefers structure in games because I'm like as a human being, as an individual, I don't consider myself to be a particularly creative person. Like, if you give me if you give me a box of Legos, like, that doesn't seem like that's not interesting to me. Like, if you give me a box of Legos that I'm supposed to build, like, the Millennium Falcon, and I can follow some instructions, okay, like, I can do that. Like, I'll find that satisfying. And so, but I don't, as a person, I just don't genuinely lean towards, like, here's an open box, like, go find the fun. It's like, I prefer structure and being able to deviate from that and be creative, like, within certain means. But generally speaking, I'm not someone that has found it satisfying or just doesn't have the certain personality to kind of go down that path. And so Sea of Thieves, I find fun, like, partially as a – if I was playing that game with just some friends, I mean, maybe if I had the right group. But as a streamer, it's different because I'm like, all right, I'm going to be, like, more aggressive. I'm going to be a dick. Like, I'm going to take on a persona that is going to allow us to hopefully put ourselves in situations that finds that fun. But, like, I was playing that game by myself. Even if I was being aggressive and being a dick, like, I don't know if I'd find it particularly satisfying. There's a certain context in which I've enjoyed Sea of Thieves. But and I'm not even advocating for – like, I think it's a mistake for Sea of Thieves to, like, XP itself and go down a traditional route. I think that game should go down a route that is leaning into giving the players more verbs and, like, creative expression.
Yeah.
And if you need an XP-ified game, like, Ubisoft is making a, like, pirate ship game that's supposed to come out later this year or early next year. So, like,
Assassin's Creed Rogue, literally HD, just came out.
Oh, yeah.
Again, if you're, like, desperate for that version of it, you can go play that Assassin's Creed game that no one played because it was one of those cross-generational games. Mm. I thought about checking it out. I like pirates. I'm in a piratey mood, I guess.
That one was pretty cool.
But Patrick, we're having the same thing, literally the same thing, of, like, aggression is our savior with A Way Out.
Mm. Yeah.
Where it's like we made this agreement early on that we would do the thing we normally wouldn't do. That, like, normally, so there's two characters in A Way Out. One of them is kind of like a nebbish, like, got in over his head, but kind of was I think he was an accountant or a lawyer, like, white collar crime type dude is the vibe. Rob is looking to interject. Listen, we have our theories. Don't spoil anything.
Okay.
Don't spoil anything. We're finishing this game maybe today. I have my theories about him, but his presentation is like, I'm calm, I'm rational, we should sneak through things, we should find social solutions, we shouldn't be threatening people. Hey, Leo, give me the gun, I don't want this thing to blow up. Patrick is playing as Leo, who is like a criminal with a heart of gold, loves his family, is a good dad.
But is a dipshit.
Yeah, but stares 100%.
But stares at plants and goes, can I eat this? But there was one yesterday too that was very sad.
Goes up to a cancer patient and says, like, you look kind of fucked up.
Yep.
Oh no.
Yep. There's a bit yesterday when we were playing where you just walked over to a barbecue, like to a barbecue and opened the lid on it, a grill, and opened the lid on it and then just picked up like a hot dog and took a bite of it.
Burning. It's not like it's like, no. Oh, that's been out. Like, I'm going to take that out. They're like,
it's hot.
Clear. And it was so funny.
You picked it up.
You pick it up and his hand burns, but, like, especially because at that point in the game we'd sort of started picking up on the vibe, or it was like you went over and it's like you opened it, you smelled it.
Yes.
And that sounds
it's
delicious.
Goofus and Gallon. It's Goofus. Exactly. I kind of waffed it at myself. You walked over, you grabbed it and just took a big old bite and put it back.
And we called it. It was like, I bet I'm going to open it and just pick up that goddamn flaming hot dog.
Right.
And you did.
And so, to some degree, that fun is in the game. Like, I don't want to take it away. Like, they programmed and wrote those scenarios. Like,
and
no
it's
doubt.
Meant to be funny, right? Like, it's not. Right. It's not. There's not a. There are ironic layers to our enjoyment of A Way Out, but then there are, like, full on. Like, this was intentional. This is what they were going for. Like, this was a setup and a punchline. Like, there are, you know, whatever light characterization there is. Like, there it is. To a certain degree, intentional. So it's not just like, this is like a shitty B movie and, like, we're just along kind of laughing at the fact that it's endearing. Like, there are parts of it, like, I think are genuinely well made and interesting and
right.
humorous.
But when we had a 7-minute long arm wrestling duel, I don't think that's maybe what they had intended. Or when we tried to see if anything special would happen if we both used the porta potties at the same time.
Is there a timing on R2 that will make a fart noise?
Right. There's a lot of us trying to figure something out. A lot of it did actually come back to letting Leo take the lead in certain scenarios where it was like, all right, we got to get across this bridge. We could sneak under quietly or steal a cop car and try to drive it across. Like, the clearly wrong idea.
He puts on the hat.
He's wearing, like, a prison, like, gray PT, like, physical trade PT gray shirt. Wow. It's very clearly in his prison garb. It's like, oh, I got to put on this cop hat. That'll do.
Nobody will know.
Lay down in the back. No one will notice. What a fucking goofball. I love him.
But this broader question is, like, what A Way Out does, and, like, what I think part of the reason we're responding to it is, like, it puts a certain amount of, like, structure and possibility space in the player's head, right? Like, it says, like, hey, this is a game where you should reasonably expect you can go up to a lot of things and maybe something will happen. It's not true of everything. It's not true of all objects or characters. Some things are funny. Some things are just an aside. But, like, it sets up a certain expectation that I think – I don't know how other people play this game. Like, and it sounds like maybe, like, Rob and your partner didn't play it this way. But for us, and I'm sure this is partially informed by, both our creative choice as artists – and being on a stream
artist,
is like, oh, like, maybe we can do this. And then that allows us to kind of play around and experiment and push against the game in a way that I think we're, you know, was both intentional, but I think is also very missable depending on like how you go into the game, what you end up responding to. I'm really enjoying that game. Like, good is like a more ephemeral question, but like, if good means like I had a great time for like 7 hours, like, yes.
But I think that's like an aspect of what makes games like this work now is that there's sort of an ecosystem that gives people ideas about how they can have fun with it, right? Mm-hmm. I think my partner and I would have enjoyed A Way Out a lot more had we watched you guys streaming it before we played it. But like, remember, our encounter of it was completely naive of anyone's reaction.
Right.
So like, go back to that prison sequence where like Vincent is walking through into prison and he's talking to guys like being sort of whatever, like prisoner intake, right? The hallway that leads to the inevitable like delousing and the
full frontal scene. I got you. Yeah.
Are you saying you and your partner didn't do what Austin and I did and try and see how many times we could see the dick?
Right. We talk to people and like, you know, the first conversation you hear is like, this guy's just hanging out in prisoner intake and being like, what's up?
What's up, Rob's phone?
Yeah, this is great. That's well timed. I need to mute that shit.
What's up?
1 second.
Improv.
This is it. Well, like, that's the thing. Rob is not wrong that there's lots of stuff in that game that I think is just not good. Like, there's a lot of the dialogue in those moments, and especially those early moments where you're like, this is like such a stock character from these types of movies and TV shows.
I didn't feel good about it in the first like 10 minutes.
I want to say the first hour, I was like, oh boy, oh boy. But once we got to escaping, the moment that did it for me was fishing, probably.
Yes.
It was like, oh, okay. There's a moment where you have to like craft a spear very lightly. Like, there's it's not like Minecraft.
And the splashing might have been it for me. It was just like, oh.
Yeah. One character has to like splash in the water with this very goofy looking animation to try to draw the fish towards the other one who's standing still. Sorry to spoil this puzzle. Who's standing still with a spear.
Patrick almost got
Patrick with a spit take. It was very close.
It was real close.
And then spear the fish. It was very good. It was very, very good.
Wow.
Well, and I would also say, like, I think there's also like a meta layer on top of a lot of games where the fact that it's so easy to share your experiences in a game, and that you can be rewarded with likes and retweets and views. Like, I think that in a like much broader sense has encouraged people to look at video games as more of a playground or more from a creative angle because, maybe I would do the straightforward thing here, but like maybe I can get something wild to happen and then I can share and clip that and put it up. Like, I think that actually has a tangible, the fact that it is so easy now, especially like on the PS4. I know you can do it on Xbox One X, but it's a little tougher. But I think that, like, that sense of being able to share things with the world has, like, a broad impact on how people even play most video games, because, like, you are more encouraged to kind of push the boundaries of any game, like, whether it's encouraging you to or not, because, like, well, if something happens, like, I'm going to want to share this with people.
Right.
And that's a...
Even just among friends, like, I think it's easy to hear that and think, like, oh, well, of course you guys think that you have a huge platform. But I follow lots of people who have small platforms comparably, who aren't at publications, who are just friends of mine, who also clip funny things that happen to them in Far Cry 5. Or I think, like, Voodoo Person on Twitter, Joel, our friend Joel, who clips his best Street Fighter 5 matches, where he just, like, runs back, like, an incredible comeback and gets the win. And it's like, yes, like, awesome. Like, I'm glad that the audience, even though that audience is, like, his friends, can encourage him to keep playing Street Fighter V, even though he's not, like, a pro, and even though he doesn't have a huge audience, right? It's just like, hey, I'm sharing
this. It's fun to show these things. It's fun to share these things. I think there's a huge element, and we've touched on it a couple of times here, that streaming, the performance of streaming, is in its own way making its own fun, right? Sometimes, like, again, with Natalie the other day. I'm sorry to bring this up, Natalie. She's making a face.
Death stare.
She's really upset. So what happened, in case you missed the stream, is Natalie really wanted an item in this area of Bloodborne, and she kept trying to get the jump just right to get this item. And she lost a lot of blood echoes. She lost a lot of blood vials.
What went wrong, exactly?
Just the jumping in that game is wonky as hell.
Oh.
And it became a whole thing, whether or not she could make this jump. We made a lot of songs about it.
This wasn't like a progression jump. This wasn't a jump she needed to make. This was just a fun...
this is just to get the thing.
Fun? Was it
when
fun?
When we told her what she got for it, it was... I think it hurt her a little bit. I think there was physical pain.
What was it?
On her face. It's the thing for the hats for your little messenger guys.
Oh, those are
so
cool.
They can wear
That's
hats.
Cool.
It's cute. But it was
but
like
literally nothing.
Hours of like trying to make this jump. You see our faces. There's actual face.
Wait,
faces
no,
were
be
made.
Clear. You let her do this.
Yes, we did.
Before telling her.
For a little while. She kept going afterward. It went on for a while. It went on for a while. I'm not going to lie. But see, this is what I'm saying. Is Danica and I made our own fun out of Natalie's
you
suffering.
Okay, hold on. That's not... No, this is terrible. Like, we can't extend making your own fun to your friends being assholes while you suffer.
No, you can't.
I think
no,
you can.
Someone that regularly used to play the X-Files theme in bars, like, yeah, you can.
There's performative trolling is part of streaming.
It was Natalie... And Natalie, you're suggesting, was taking some enjoyment from that as a player.
I think it's more like she was taking one for the team so we could have a funny stream.
Gotcha.
You know what was good
extremely?
What's
that?
Was when Danica was like, you just lost all your blood echoes. That was good. That's the sort of like detail that you want people to point out when you're feeling low.
Yeah.
You just want like everyone to know, like, hey, that resource you painstakingly collected. It's gone.
She beat a hunter earlier on, too, and lost all the blood echoes from it. And she fell down a ladder and lost all the blood echoes. It was hard. Natalie, thank you for being a champion. You are wonderful for dealing with us and not actually murdering us with the controller, because that could have been very
you know
much
you and
reasonable.
Are? You are the dude you just fucked up your Ferrari guy from The Rock.
Yeah. Yep. Correct.
Classic. Yes.
That was us.
Agreed.
That was
I'm sorry
us.
I wasn't here. Natalie, I'm sorry I couldn't right the ship. Give you a little tip on the jump or whatever.
You couldn't tack the sails.
I couldn't
tack
the
sails. You couldn't
tack
the sails in that scenario. But sorry to bring up painful memories, Natalie. But this is all to say that I actually think that streaming, especially streaming with, in the context that we stream, with a bunch of us, you know, kind of trying to be fun and find our own fun, is a way of doing this, a way of making your own fun in a game.
There is a through line here, which is, and I'm not putting you and Danica on blast, but is there a limit to this? Or is there a place...
Started cracking up.
Is there a moment at which, and this is true for Sea of Thieves also, is like Patrick, you and I, all of us, we've spoken about how part of what makes Sea of Thieves kind of weird right now is it's at a crossroad or it's at ends with itself about whether or not it wants to enable aggressive pirate-like behavior from its pretend pirates. Where is the line, but when we talk a little bit about where this gets into trouble around, like, I'm making my own fun at the expense of someone else. For instance, one, Natalie Watson, Waypoint's live stream producer. Or you think about something like, you know, obviously we had that conversation about spawn camping inside of Sea of Thieves, where you steal someone's boat and just they keep reappearing on it, and they need to scuttle the whole ship in order to be able to like start over again. We're like, that's a thing where it feels like the game has dropped the ball, because you're a pirate and you should be able to steal someone's ship without them being forced to not play the game anymore or whatever.
Right.
What's happening there? Like, why, where, how far can we push? Like, this is how I'm making fun for myself, even in a scenario where, like, maybe it makes it less fun for another player.
The ethics of making your own fun, in other words. Yeah, I think
especially in multiplayer scenarios, or in co-op scenarios, or in scenarios where Natalie is playing Bloodborne.
Right. I think Bloodborne was a special case because Bloodborne itself is such an asshole. It is such an asshole of a game. I will fight anybody to the death who thinks it's completely fair all the time.
You're making it more of an asshole.
I mean, like,
you're making it
to
worse.
Be clear, it was more that we were laughing at what was happening than telling her, oh, you need to do this or you're not playing right. This is very much like we were just amused by what was going on in the room and like fostering that. It was not like, Natalie, you have to do this or you lose your job, because that would be really mean. I think there's like a gut check of like how mean are you being that people should probably take. And of course, it's going to be different for different people. And I think there's a real discussion to be had about the actual sort of ethics of this. Like, where is this practice actually like doing harm to another person? Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's always going to be a discussion worth having. Absolutely.
Well, it's hard because like the harm in most cases in games is about like time being wasted. I think about something like Sea of Thieves, where like so here's a case where someone was probably threatening to do us harm, but it actually made the whole experience more fun for us. Was at the end of our stream on Monday. When was that? Whatever day that was. Wednesday. What's today? Today's Friday?
I don't remember.
It was Wednesday morning.
I think it was Wednesday,
It was Wednesday morning. Yeah. We played. It was me, you, Natalie, and Danica. Mm-hmm. Right? Is that right? Okay. And it's been a long week.
It has.
And we had like a really simple run that day. We did a bunch of quests. We had a bunch of treasure. And we were ready to turn it all in. And we hadn't really seen much of anybody. I tried to get us a little spicy. I tried to like, oh, there's a sloop. Let's go fuck up that sloop. Let's go take whatever they have or whatever. I was hoping for a galleon to come through on us. There were a couple of times where something could have jumped off and it didn't.
Why didn't you fuck up the sloop?
Because no one else wanted to. It was just me out there.
Wait, Natalie wanted
to. Natalie apparently wanted to. But like, 2-on-2, I guess that's not enough.
Jump off the boat and just try and swim after it.
It was very far away. It was one of those things of like, we have to really make a committed effort to get it while it's there. So we pull in to port and there is a ship there. And we're like, we're coming to the end of the stream. We need to turn in this stuff and end the stream. So finally I had my moment of like, oh, we got to go in. We can't waste time. We're not going to go to another outpost. We don't have time to go to another outpost. We have to land here. And as we arrive, it starts to pull away. And they're like, oh, they don't want none. It's cool, whatever. And then as Danica runs on to the dock, she sees someone there, and it all clicks into place for me where I'm like, oh, shit. They're, like, juking us. They put three of their people on the ship, left one behind as, like, an ambush, and they're going to loop back around and get us. And what ended up happening is we ended up building an entire system of, like, escorting people back to shore with the loot so that no one ever was alone, and we were able to get in and like turn everything in. And in the end, we never got jumped. I never saw that other person.
I was ready for that.
Chat swears that other person was there, so I believe them. But I suspect that person just got left behind on the island. And
like my pig who only spawned in for you guys way
weird.
After.
But like I suspect that person just got left behind by mistake and then respawned on the ship and was never there for us in a real way. Yeah. But imagine a scenario in which like that person kills us and then they take all our shit and they turn it all in and we lose the entire like 2 hours that we've been streaming. We lose all of that progress. For me, I'm cool with that because, like, that's the game. And for me, that's actually...
And also, there's no real progress in that game.
Right. Yeah. Swish, what's good? Who cares?
It's all a treadmill.
Right. Exactly. And that's fine. In fact, that's part of why I'm happy that there's only what they call horizontal progression, because I like the risk of being able to lose something there.
Yeah.
I like that. I'm the person who's like, 2 hours? Fuck it. It's gone. Let it go. Like, I had more fun in that 15 minutes of being afraid of being ambushed than in the 2 hours of just running things like clockwork. And so for me, that's fine. But there are lots of people for who that's terrible and scary and like – or especially if someone is using a loophole or is finding an exploit or a creative like a social engineering solution to fuck them over where it doesn't feel fair or something like that. This comes up a lot in games that have this mix of PvE and PvP. So it happens in MMOs. Happens on EVE Online. Lots of like –
The Souls games.
The Souls games where like someone will roll through. There was a – I remember years and years ago when I think it was Vinny – either Vinny or Brad was playing through Demon Souls, and someone invaded them using the scraping spear and broke all of their armor.
Oh my God. Broke all of their armor.
That happened to me.
Totally. It sucks. It's in the rules of
the
game.
That would make me mad.
It does. It feels like because.
I thought it was funny when it happened. I was mad, but I was like, funny.
So that's the thing.
Mad, but laughing.
The thing that's interesting about that is in a traditional fight, what you lose is if you die, you lose your souls, or you die and you drop your souls. If you die twice, you lose your souls. So maybe at that point, what you've lost is the last 45 minutes of progression or something. But once you get your armor broken, that actually extends out the time cost of what has been taken from you to something that feels like it's more anger-inducing, because you have to grind for more materials to repair your armor or whatever it is.
Play offline.
What's that? What was that? Just play offline.
Okay,
play offline. Totally.
It's the risk you take, man.
So I think that's an interesting subtopic here for sure.
Yeah.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I totally agree. I get really mad. I mean, the thing is, I don't play a ton of multiplayer games because of this kind of stuff. Like, I just don't want to mess with it. I'm more interested in, like, the systems that were designed and what's going on in the game. I find it interesting from, like, an outsider point of view.
Right.
Shenanigans in multiplayer games. I find them interesting to sort of watch, especially somebody streaming and that sort of thing happens, or somebody shows me a highlight. That's interesting. But for me in my life, and for a lot of the letters that we received, it's a lot of folks who took, like, yeah, a lot of folks did this with multiplayer games as well, but who took, like, a single-player game and saw if they could break it in an interesting way, or saw if they could, like, do a weird thing in an interesting way, and that was the fun of it.
Right.
And I guess that ties back a little bit to something I talked about last week, which was the pacifist runs of, you know, violent games, basically. Right. That sort of thing is always – I'm always down for that. I'm also somebody who really enjoys watching speedrunning, which is an entire category of making your own fun.
Yeah, totally.
Basically.
Totally.
Like, it's an entire genre with of making
sub,
your own fun.
With sub-examples of that.
Exactly.
Where you don't just do, I'm going to play this game as fast as possible, but you do a run without
glitchless,
any exploits.
Or, exactly.
Or you do the half A press run of Mario 64.
Oh, I love it.
It's my favorite thing ever.
Those are so good.
Little weird sub-genres of it in which you're constantly like, how can I reconfigure this game and my play in a way that brings me even more joy and challenges me in a different way?
Yeah. Those are
Into the Breach does that kind of in an official way and by giving you achievements to go after.
Oh, yeah.
But even just like, oh, I'm going to do this random team. I'm going to do this weird collection of mechs is really good at like, figure out your own challenge and go for it, right?
This game is actually like addictive for me. I'm at 165 hours now. I can't. Stop.
We just need a camera on Natalie's face for this entire podcast.
isn't that still not like – because you've left that on for probably 60 hours.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's not like official, but it's probably at 100 hours right now for a real play. So like we're getting to
– It's good.
We're getting to almost prey territory.
So you like it
at this point.
Is what you're saying.
I might be in love with it. I might be marrying Into the Breach.
Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We're changing legislation so that a woman in a video game can get married in the state of New York.
Yeah, finally.
It's going to happen.
Finally, the representation.
Also, Prey. I'm already married to Prey, so
it's
like,
fine.
You know,
so it's like poly. It's a poly situation.
It's a poly marriage of a game and a woman.
And a game.
Yes.
Or is it –
are
Prey and Into the Breach also
– Yes. It's going to be a full poly situation.
Gotcha. Like
fully poly. Not just meta – what is it? What is this right?
I don't fucking know. It's been too long.
Metamore?
Metamore.
I think it's Metamore. Yeah. Anyway – this has been fun. We have a million stories,
okay.
So I figured we could go into stories soon, unless folks want to kind of talk about another game that they've done this with and had a really good time with this.
No,
I always like to. I always like to leave their room for this sort of stuff because it's good. Maybe some of these stories will spark a story of our own. I have like 7 that I picked that were really good. We got a lot. Thank you so much, readers/listeners, for sending in cool stories of games you've made your own fun in. Going to read a few, and maybe those will spark some thoughts for us. The first one is, I figured I'd start with the Soulsy one.
Sure.
You know, we're talking about Souls a bit. This one comes in from Jake from Illinois. Jake says, About a year ago, I was introduced to the Souls community, and with it, I was introduced to challenge running. I was a little iffy on whether or not I really enjoyed the Souls games until I started watching some of Lobos Jr.'s videos and streams. At this point, he'd probably done every kind of challenge run you can think of. No leveling, no healing, magic only, shield only, etc. This is when I saw how deep the Souls games can really go. My favorite run I've ever done is with the mods that increase the number of enemies as well as surviving their aggro range, or sorry, excuse me, increasing their aggro range to a ridiculous size. This combination of mods turned the game into more of a survival horror game than an action RPG, and was full of completely unexpected jump scares and just disturbing, broken AI behavior that isn't normally seen in the game. The game played more like Left 4 Dead or Call of Duty Zombies than I came to expect from a Souls game. This is the most fun I've had challenge running because I was feeling something new while playing one of these games, genuine fear. I think at the core of making our own fun in games, we always want a different experience that feels fresh but familiar. So I'm curious if any of y'all have ever gotten an entirely different feeling from what you normally expect from a particular game, playing with weird rules and making your own fun.
Yeah, well, so the one that comes to mind for me is the one that I wrote about again or referenced again last week during our My Gun Week thing, which was Watch Dogs, the first Watch Dogs,
yeah,
where I decided to do a run without killing anybody. The thing that was interesting is I didn't do a run like that because I wasn't going to restart the game every time I killed somebody. But what I did was, like, give myself the talk that said, hey, for real, I'm going to try to get through every encounter without killing somebody. I'm going to commit to that. Like, I know that Adrian Iconic Hat Pierce is not the dude who I want him to be. He is not – well, what's the guy from Person of Interest, Rob? What's the main character's name?
Mr. Reese?
Is that his name? The main
Finch?
Whatever the main guy is in Person of Interest. I forget.
Well, it's an ensemble cast, Austin. Okay, there's no
the
real
guy
main
who goes
guy
out there and fucks people up with the guy in his ear. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mr. Reese.
He's not going to be Mr. Reese. He's not
Jim Cosvio.
Yeah. He's not going to be that character. I know that. But there's enough overlap here that I can kind of play it that way and try to find solutions that don't involve me just shooting people to death. And that meant that every time someone got killed, whether in a car accident, like someone who was like trying to like run across the street and I just clipped them, or there was at least one or two situations where I finally got completely closed in by security guards or by cops, and it was like, all right, like, I can't win this fight with this baton alone, with this baton in stealth. It's time to bring out the gun. That made those moments actually feel really tense and scary.
Yeah.
Like, and so, like, I didn't keep a bunch of weapons on me. I didn't keep a bunch of ammo on me. It was one of those things where, like, I'm willing to pull the trigger, but only in the absolute most, like, hard, like, the most inescapable situations. Except for the one time that I ended up writing about for Paste years ago, which was, like, this whole situation where it basically looked like a hate crime had occurred, and I just got like really angry and interceded. And so that to me is like one of those exact things. It's not it is a challenge run to some degree, but it's not a challenge run in that traditional sense where it required me to start over if I didn't succeed. It was just like, I'm going to role play
as
this character.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And that was really fun. That was really like made me like that game way more than I would have otherwise.
Well, yeah.
And a question about that, I think that's an interesting case of like, a lot of times games can end up maybe sabotaging the fun that they're best at providing. Mm. Like, I think Prey does this to an extent, right? Like, you can break the progression curve of that game. Or BioShock famously, like, people, like, I remember designers were surprised that people tended to repeat what they were taught in the intro of the 1-2 punch.
Right.
Zap somebody
zap
with a stun,
smash,
and then execute them with a gun. That's kind of what you did. And people didn't play with the cool tools that you were sort of given. I think for me, like Watch Dogs, because it was such a crutch that, like, if you were a shitty hacker, like special agent man, you could just pull like your arsenal out of your trench coat and murder 50 people and like be like, I sure hacked that.
White hack, get a rocket launcher.
Right.
Totally.
And so, like, that's a case where, like, by putting those arbitrary limits on yourself, by saying, like, I'm not going to play Prey with anything but human powers. I'm not going to do any direct damage plasmids in BioShock. I'm not going to use guns when hacker abilities are available. Suddenly, like, it turns out there are systems that support a much more interesting game, but more direct solutions exist and end up sort of sabotaging the game that is there.
One of the ironies of Watch Dogs 2 is that in supporting more non-fatal violent ways of play, you had like a way cooler attack option in the cool like yo-yo attack thing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Also there were like stun weapons and stuff that were non-fatal. I actually, in trying to pursue a similar like play style, felt less fulfilled because it didn't feel like I was playing against the game. It gave me too many options to be non-fatal, so that playing it that way was just like not that big of a deal. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It wasn't a challenge at all in that way. So that was that's my. It was the right decision, I think, for the game, but also I kind of missed that added challenge of doing it.
You want to do it explicitly when you're not supposed to,
right?
Do it,
totally.
Which is kind of cool. That's kind of an interesting thing. Yeah. I'm always going to respect games that let you do to break the hell out of the game.
Yeah.
Of course, that's me. That's how I play everything. I always play immersive sims like this. I always do like a different challenge run for myself in almost any playthrough. I won't like necessarily restart everything, but that's how I have fun.
The challenge run we're doing currently is, can we record a podcast without there being loud banging in every adjacent room?
We're next to the like security room now, so there's always security room stuff. And we're like on two sides. Like one side is the kitchen, which is like the show kitchen. Yeah. And one side is like the security office. So it's always like, well done.
It's great.
Good challenge run. Good challenge run. All right. I'm going to – this one, I think, Austin, you're going to appreciate this one. This one comes from Need More Loot, who's in our fan Discord and also watch streams and such. Hey, Waypoint fam. A long time ago in a virtual galaxy far away, I had an MMO problem addiction to a little game you may have heard of called MXO, The Matrix Online, for you blue pills out there. I spent most of my disposable time and the time I should have been sleeping fighting tirelessly for the, oh, Jesus, Merovingian?
Merovingian.
Merovingian. Okay,
yeah,
great.
Of course.
For the Merovingian across Megacity, mopping up those pesky followers of the Oracle of Machines. There was a system in the game that would reward the most loyal subjects with a chance to party in Club Hell with the Merovingian himself, and if lucky, steal a kiss from Persephone when he wasn't looking. However, one night, we discovered if you invited party members, let them in, then disbanded the group, you could smuggle people into the instance.
Nice.
Imagine over 100 people dressed in what now would be appropriate dead orbit outfits and fetish
Perfect.
Wear partying,
Good.
Eating far too much cake, and having a great time. As a side note, we would also try and get a little backdoor action and sneak into the corridors as seen in the films and would soon find a poor GM dressed as an agent of the machines that would be tasked with chasing us out of the area by any means, including killing us in game. This is by far one of my favorite moments of making what was fairly, it was a fairly flat, buggy, remember those elevator doors, Austin?
I do.
MMO that never quite lived up to the promise. Much love to the rare rabbit wherever he is now.
That's matrixy as fuck, man.
Yeah, dude. It's so good. That game was so good because the solution on the GMing side always felt in character because it was. They like
Oh yeah, they
the
had
GMs,
to like police.
Right. The
right?
GMs
like,
played as agents who were policing the simulation. And so like if you found an exploit or got into a situation you weren't supposed to, the agents would show up for you, you know, and like
so
chase
good.
You away or kill you. The game was really fucking good and we'll never see it again. It's fine. It's fine.
I really want to read like an oral history of the making
we,
of that game.
We did an oral history of, or not an oral history, we did a profile on the fan who is trying to archive it and make it,
I remember that,
make it playable again in some fashion, but it's a long road that's taken many diversions. But yeah, an oral history of just the game itself, the making of it, the GMing of it, like the major factions would make me feel
so
very
cool.
Good.
Were the Wachowskis involved? Because I know, like, famously at the end of the action console game, the Wachowskis sort of appear at the end and,
of
lovingly, like, just bash video games and
then,
like, here's a boss fight. Was there similar, like,
I think
Wachowski
they were,
influence
I,
on
I,
Matrix
I
Online?
I think that they were involved with some of the story stuff because the story continues. The story picks up from the end of the third Matrix film and involves things like the death of Morpheus and like some other major factional realignments and betrayals.
But this came out after the trilogy was finished, right?
Yes, yes.
So they were probably working. They're getting ready for Speed Racer.
Yeah, of course. I bet that they had some oversight. I believe they shoved over a police Bible is what I almost said. A story Bible or here's three pages. Here's a one page on where we see this going. Fill it in, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't remember. I bet if you dig around online, you'll find out instantly. But I don't have a computer.
They understood video games, so
yeah.
I,
exactly.
there's reason to think to err on the side of involvement over non-involvement.
I think even the model it took shows their influence. The notion of GMs playing as agents is such a Wachowski thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
God, that's so cool. I really wish I could have played that because it feels like that was something that I would have. One day when that fan gets it, you know, or we have time travel.
Yeah.
Or this or that. Another fun one here comes in from Ryan. He says, hello, WayPals. Deus Ex 2000, so the original, had a few points where you are given access to an apartment slash office space that, in world, is open up to your player. I would spend way too much time bringing cans of pop and other items into these spaces and carefully organizing them on shelves and in closets, making the space my own. Unfortunately for me, there's a plot beat wherein one of these spaces is raided by the Men in Black. Rude! When you later get back, when you return to the space, I believe it's been taken over in some fashion. This impacted me greatly as I spent so much time establishing this as my personal space for my character. So, of course, I spent the time reestablishing this place as my home. I get the urge to play this game once every couple of years, and each time I go through this exact same sequence of events, it's great every time. I just love that. Somebody who's like, hold on, let me get every soda can in the right place. Yeah. Like, let me get every, like, object to the right place.
The irony there, too, is like, that was improvisation the first time.
Yeah.
And now it's become like their canonical playthrough technique. And so they do it every time.
Yeah.
JC's a big nester.
Yeah, apparently. Apparently.
He really is.
I'm fine with it.
I remember Dielacina, who's freelanced for us a few times, did something like this with Prey. Like, didn't even really like Prey very much, but like, got everybody into Morgan's apartment, like everybody in like the first couple of levels
Jesus
of the game,
Christ.
And like just dragged them all in and was like, "Here it is. Here's a corpse pile." Like,
that
made
is enormously
a giant,
aggressive.
Like,
yeah,
that is,
let them know.
That's,
you know?
That is such a revealing detail about Dia.
Jesus, Dude,
like, I hope I'm not misremembering this.
Well, this
but
game
I saw
doesn't
pictures.
Let me drop a deuce on someone's carpet, so I'll do the next best thing.
And drop 30 bodies.
Yeah.
Exactly. Perfect. Just like put them around
Are
the
you
bed.
Not pleased with your handiwork, Morgan?
I mean, that's what Morgan was like. I'm just, you know, that's how you can play Morgan.
It's true.
Oh, God, I love that stuff. I do that sort of thing. Not with the bodies, but like I make piles of... This is how I play Dishonored. I make piles of sleeping guards, and I make them into, like, arrangements, but I make sure they're all in the recovery position, which is lying on your left side with your legs in a certain... This is a real-life
sure
thing.
I'm sure they appreciate that.
This is a real-life thing. I make sure they're taken care of. I put them in a safe place where either rats or the blood flies can't eat them, put them all in the recovery position, and I make them cuddle. Like, I definitely make them, like, spoon in certain arrangements. I make a whole...
What do you think they do when they wake up? Why are they?
They're spooning.
Yeah, but why am I spooning with this?
Why am I spooning with my coworkers? Because they're coworkers.
So, I have done something. So this actually happened to me last week.
Oh, good.
I was playing Dishonored 2.
Were you the big spoon or the little spoon?
And no,
was
doesn't
in Starbucks
doesn't
involve
spooning. So I was playing Dishonored, and there was a guard that I had to. He was being very fussy, so I choked him out, as you do.
Yep.
And knocked him unconscious, and then there was a comfortable chair. And I was like, I don't want the other guards to realize anything's amiss. I'll bet, like, canonically, it'd be clever of me to put this guard all drowsy-like in this chair, and it'll be great. Couldn't quite get the guard to sit in the chair correctly. So I sort of stepped back and aimed, and then I just sort of tossed the guard onto the chair. Well, it turns out that Emily Caldwin... Like, she's buff, man.
Yeah,
she is just a beast. And she flung that guard past the chair, over the guardrail behind the chair, and down the four-story drop behind, like, over the catwalk.
I see where the problem is.
Emily.
And
that's
anyways,
the problem right there.
Emily,
yeah,
away.
That's kind of where my non-lethal playthrough sort of hit a snag for that mission. I was just like, I'm going to cleverly stash this guard in the chair and then just basically like Batman this guy off the building. And
wait, what do you think Batman does?
He routinely drops people
off
buildings.
Not onto the ground.
Yeah, that's right. He ties a rope around their leg. Like,
right.
Like the snap of that's not going to do some real
it's
fucking
like a,
damage.
It's like a micro bungee. You know, he's had it designed. He's a genius. He's a science genius. Yeah. And so he made it so that it doesn't hurt anybody's legs or their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Lucius Fox, didn't you see? Aren't you familiar with the comic books? Alfred?
Yes.
Does it ring any bells, Rob?
Exactly.
Lucius Fox, great humanitarian.
Yeah.
Good. Good. He's real good on privacy rights, too. Gotta tell you. He's good on all the ACLU issue areas. Real good.
Did that movie come out while you were at the ACLU?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, but
I'm pretty
hold
sure.
On. In that movie's
it was 2009,
defense.
Right?
Was it? Was it too before that? Anyway, continue.
All right, I'm sorry.
You're
may
probably
have,
right.
May
no,
have
you're
right.
I think you're right.
It was like 09, 08. It was a while ago. But Lucius even says, if that building, if that device is at Wayne Enterprises, I'm not. So, like, you know.
Yeah, but then
even
he goes along with it. Yeah. And he's like, well,
for
Mr. Wayne.
For that one case.
There's always one case. There's always one case. Anyway, we can't do this. That's a different podcast.
See, we're making our own fun within the podcast.
We
this
are.
Is us.
True.
This is
it's
us. True. Hashtag this is us. All right, we got a good one. I think Rob would really appreciate this one especially. I think we all will. But Rob, this one's, you know, it's kind of for you. This is from James in Vermont. When I was in college in the early 2000s, I started playing the baseball management sim Out of the Park Baseball. It was fun as a single-player experience, but I was really intrigued by its online play options. If you had 30 or so friends, everyone could control one team. You could trade players between clubs, draft players each offseason, etc. Unfortunately, I didn't have one friend who was the exact type of nerd to get into this baseball management sim with me, much less 30. However, by virtue of some message board or chat room, I stumbled across an online OOTP franchise league that was looking for players. The crew that I signed up with wasn't just interested in working to outmanage each other, however. Uh-oh. It turned out this was, basically, a role-play league.
Oh, hell yeah.
As a manager in the league, I was not only obligated to check in a few times a week to respond to trade offers, make roster moves, and set lineups for next week's games, I was also required to document my fictional world. I guess this is really a Rob and Austin thing, so.
Yeah, I'm all in.
Each week, I had to write in-universe team press releases, game stories by the local beat reporters, and the occasional profile of one of the team's stars. The sim had started in the 1970s or so, and I was at 1980 when I joined on, so I'd write press releases about how we just drafted an exciting prospect named Daryl Strawberry, with whom we were expecting big things. I've written little game summaries in which I'd entertain myself by including references to then-current events, e.g., just as we were all delighted to see the American hostages come home after their long captivity in Iran, so too were the faithful at Kauffman Stadium excited to see their first place Royals return from a lengthy road trip. It was very stupid and kind of fun.
Can I role play this person's like editor?
I think you should. I think you should. Be like, I don't know, this is some purple prose here, buddy.
Yeah.
It was very stupid and kind of fun. Though as you might imagine, after several months of writing stories like that, it started to become kind of a chore instead of a weird way to flex my creative muscles. But it was a fun, weird thing for me. My life for a while as part of an attempt to add a bit of color to all the quantitative output of our simulation. Thanks for the podcast. Take care. James in Vermont. I love that so much.
I mean, that's amazing. It sounds excruciating.
Yeah, it sure does.
I definitely did something very similar to that as a teen in like online fake wrestling leagues.
Good.
Wrote all the promos, described matches. Lots of linking MIDI files for what my entrance music was. You know, all the
did you
all
record
the
anything?
No. Okay. I didn't have any audio equipment at the time. I was like 12 or 13. Do you know what I mean? Like
right.
It was not. I did not have that setup. I wish that's what it was. It was not that.
You need to tell us a little bit more about it?
No, because it was so long ago, I don't really remember much,
right,
honestly.
Fair.
I just remember the website form. The form just was hideous. It was like black and yellow and like, you know, it looked like an old GeoCities page.
Perfect.
But I was writing about my wrestlers, so, you know.
I hope you find that one day and share that with us.
If I ever do, I promise not to.
I wish I knew where my – because GeoCities got archived.
Yeah.
Or like people, you know, did the work of archiving when GeoCities went down. So it's like those websites exist. Like, and I know I've got one, many GeoCities websites, but I have no. You have to know like what were you in Times Square? Like, you know, like the different divisions that they had you like fall in, based on like what kind of stuff you're writing about, and then you also need to know like the number or something like that. I wish I had that. Someone go find my GeoCities websites.
Hell yeah. Well, because you were actually writing professionally when you were, like, 13 or 14, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, stretch the definition of professionally. But, yes, somehow I was getting money in the mail that my parents were taking away from me. Rightfully so.
Oh, wow.
It was too much. You don't need $500 a month when you're 12,
right?
Is what I'll say. So they put it in a college fund and gave me enough to buy.
You could have been a really cool 12-year-old, though.
No, I couldn't have been, Rob.
The coolest. All right,
if I was able to, if I could go back now and be like, "Yo, here's how you be a cool 12-year-old." Sure.
You could have been like Jupiter Jones and those guys, like hire a chauffeur to take you around on adventures with your video game money.
One time, so when PR people, this is long before I understood or would have turned these things down, but I was too young to know better. When PR people would find out how young I was, they thought it'd be funny to like, when they had the budget to do things, like to like send it to the like 15-year-old, because it was like humorous. And so Rockstar Games, I can't remember what game it was for, but famously was showing something downtown in Chicago. And so they're like, "We'd like to have a town car pick you up."
Oh my God.
And it was actually like a limo. And they had me they picked me up from high school in the limo.
Holy shit.
Man.
But everyone thought you were really cool.
Which, of course, my dad was also in the limo,
right.
So that was like...
Yeah, okay, that adds
I was going to say,
so it wasn't quite like big.
No.
No, unfortunately. That's if only... God.
Oh, my God.
Hopefully I was going to see Manhunt 2.
Yeah, that probably...
I actually think I was going to see Smuggler's Run.
Oh, okay.
Highly underrated.
They should have sent a big truck.
PS2 game.
They should have sent like a big like Humvee or like an off-road truck to pick you up. But like a stretch Hummer is what they should have sent to pick you up.
Oh, stretch Hummer.
That would be on brand at least.
Wow. All right, I don't think we can top that. I think that's pretty good, Patrick. That's pretty awesome.
Patrick Klepek, 15 years old, made his own fun by being picked up by a limo.
Sent by Rockstar. It's pretty incredible.
Patrick, Reddit is gonna have your ass for this one. Okay.
Oh, so you add it to, what is it, Deep Freeze, whatever that is, add it to the list.
God.
Also, I used to turn in all the games I got to GameStop and spend it on more games. Oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
Ethics.
I was 14. Any 14-year-old would have done that.
I think that's
also, what was I going to do with Harry Potter for Game Boy Advance?
Play it again. And this time,
make your own fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't use a broomstick. See if you can get through the whole thing with no broomstick.
Good luck in the Quidditch mini game.
Yeah, exactly. Harry had to learn how to run for once.
Yeah, for once.
Do
in
a little running.
Life.
Use your feet, Harry. Yeah.
Classic line. Use your feet, Harry.
It's Snape saying he's shaking a wand at him. Okay, all right. I guess we have made our own fun enough.
I know. I have my mother's feet.
I gotta go.
Okay.
I want the record to show I did not finish my water. I won my game.
He made his own fun. Austin's gotta go. So Austin, where can we find you online?
Austin_Walker on Twitter.
All right, awesome. Rob, where can we find you?
At Rob Zachney.
Patrick, how about you? Now that you're not 15 and a woman.
You can find me at Patrick Cutler, but living up to 15-year-old Patrick's self, I just want to let people know I am in the process of getting the answer to life's greatest question.
Hell yes.
Where does the poop go?
Oh, shit.
So if you watched our Waypoint streams of A Way Out, we don't... Apparently, I was informed, Austin, that Vinny also raised this question in Jive Bomb's
The people want to know. Where's the poop go?
To summarize it very quickly, when you are escaping from prison in A Way Out, you have to like remove a grate from behind a toilet in order to like get into the larger like innards of the prison to make your a way out. And it's unclear how these toilets work. Like they're not connected to pipes. Like you just move this toilet out of the way, and then like you're presumably pooping in these toilets. So where does the poop go? So I sent EA an email. Like, I realized this is a little weird. I wrote in the email, where does the poop go? And they said, this is hilarious. We're going to forward it to the creative director. We'll get back to you next week. And I was like, good.
We're going to get the real answers to the real questions.
Hopefully the creative director, that dude does seem to have a sense of humor. So hopefully I...
hopefully he has a good answer.
I'm into it. Yeah. Let's find out.
I'm very excited to find out about poop's way out. Basically, that's the real, use that in the head. That's free. That's free right there. As always, you can send questions or great stories about making Eurofun to gaming@vice.com with the subject question. Shout outs to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. We're on Twitter at Waypoint. We're on Facebook at Waypoint Vice. We're on YouTube at Waypoint Vice. And we are at waypoint.vice.com. Thank you so much. for sharing your stories.
We need to tell people about PAX East again before we forget.
Bumblebee Theater, 2:30 p.m. Saturday.
Be there.
Is it 2:30?
It is. I checked.
2:30. Yeah, yeah. I kept thinking it was 6, but it's 2:30. It's at 2:30. Bumblebee Theater, thank you very much. You're all beautiful people. Have a great weekend. Be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Sherlock.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.